dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Jim Hansen sitting in for Frank. We have the pleasure right now of talking with Jim Mitchell, who was one of the key architects of the CIA's Enhanced Interrogation Program, and for the United States military was involved with the Survival, Escape, Resistance, and Evasion programs. And Jim, I just wanted to welcome you to the show, and I think be thankful that in my previous incarnations, I was on the receiving end of some of that quality training, and I would like to thank you for it and be thankful that we're not participating in that right now, because it works. That's one thing I think people like to say a lot of things about enhanced interrogation and call it names and other things like that. But the bottom line is, if you have, or if someone has knowledge that you want from them, you can make them give it to you by making their world very uncomfortable, and through some of the techniques, by letting their animal brain convince them that bad things are happening. Waterboarding, for instance, being one of them. You know, it's been maligned unfairly, and I'd like to thank you for the work you did with Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and others to help us gain an insight into the terrorist mind.
Yeah, one of the things that I think when they looked at this in the 50s became pretty clear was that you may not be able to get this particular piece of information that you're looking for, but you will certainly get more than you would from a voluntary questioning, especially if you're careful not to ask leading questions and not, you know, do something to implant false memories or somehow mess up the validity of what you're asking them for. So it is possible, I think, to use some pressure to get people to respond in a way that provides more information than they would have otherwise. As long as we're on that topic, and the topic of survival, evasion, resistance, and escape, one of the things that your listeners may not be aware of is that Al-Qaeda actually had a resistance to interrogation manual called the Manchester Manual that was based on U.S. Army Special Forces resistance to interrogation training. So one of the reasons that the agency and some of the other people involved thought it was important to get someone who was familiar with the way we train our own soldiers and warfighters to resist is because they were using that as a basis, some of them were, to resist our interrogation.
Well, and that's the reason for the schools, is you can learn some things. But in the end, the bottom line is, basically, everybody breaks. You know, it was amazing to me in some of the times I was able to observe some of that training. Guys who went in thinking they were the biggest, baddest, toughest guy in the world and they weren't going to tell anything were quivering masses of jelly after not too much of it, because in the end, it's not how tough you think you are. Your animal brain, you know, the bottom of your brainstem runs things. And if you can convince that you're in trouble, it will override your tough guy attitude. And that in the end was part of why you were successful.
Yeah, I think all of us make decisions about what we are trying to do based on our intentions in the moment. Well, we go into the moment with certain intentions, but events that happen in the moment can help us shift our priorities. And sometimes, rather than delaying and protecting the information, your priority shifts to providing just enough information to get this person to give you some, you know, some a chance to recuperate or some relief or a way to avoid something that you fear might happen that isn't going to happen. And when their intentions shift, when their priorities shift, is when you can start switching to social influence.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that came out in your conversations with Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, specifically about how they believed that it was not going to be the violent struggle that would lead them to success against the West, that they thought our soft underbelly, kind of the overly civilized version, the politically correct influences in our society would lead us to more or less defeat ourselves. Do you think that's still applicable?
Well, I think there are probably still people at the tip of the spear for them that believe that sort of stuff, particularly on the basis of some of the reactions that you've seen to some of President Trump's policies, the pushback against those policies. Remember, these people who are fighting us are Islamists who believe that their God has given them dominion over the earth and a holy mandate to wage a continuous war until they've subjugated, converted, or slaughtered all of us, right? And so these folks who believe they're participating in a history-shaking restoration of Islamic power see America as one of their major threats to survival of that brand and the chief obstacle. And they used to believe that if they could just strike a terrible blow against Americans, that we would retreat into isolationism and they'd have an opportunity to, you know, just carry out the conquest. But they were convinced, at least Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was convinced, that even if they couldn't strike a decisive blow, we would eventually run from the fight because while we're militarily strong, we're weak in resolve and spirit. And we have short attention spans, no appetite for conflict while they love death more than life. We're weakened by our desire to have the world like us. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed told me that he thought the press and the American public would turn against the war on terror and that the free media, our mainstream media, would frame their cause, promote it by framing it as impossible to win and fraught with unacceptable losses. And that in doing that, it was going to strengthen the hearts of the Muslims who were sitting on the fence around the world, and they would rise up and join that conflict.
Well, some of that seems to have come true, but they still seem to be doing a fair job of having that agenda accepted. I mean, obviously, they had the caliphate for a number of years now in Iraq and Syria, which seems to be stressed and potentially going away. But let's talk for a moment about Turkey. Erdogan is an Islamist of the first order and seems to think he might be a worthy successor for his caliph or sultan or some major role. Do you think that he might be able to, you know, from inside an Islamic state like Turkey, push that type of agenda?
It's going to be hard with the Islamists, the ones who want to go back to a closer view. See, they're Salafists, and Salaf in Arabic means pious ancestors. And so they want to wage this Quranic war of conquest, right, by following as closely as they can to the concept of wars that's laid out in the Quran and the Hadiths and in the, you know, words and deeds of the Prophet. And so when you look at things like ISIS is doing, what you see is that they're not inventing something new. They're reviving these dormant things that have been essentially discarded by history. And the problem that the leader of Turkey has is that they don't view him as a rightful caliphate. So he's going to have a lot of trouble doing. The other thing, my impression from having, and I'm not an expert on this guy at all that you're talking about, but my take on it is that he is a Salafist, but he believes that you do it through the expansion of government and you know, basically through other than violent means in the sense that that KSM and ISIS would use. So he's got a bit of a problem with them. I don't think that they will go quietly into this.
So that was part of the problem Al-Qaeda and the rest had with the Saudis, et cetera, was they had strayed from that pure path. They were no longer, you know, worthy guardians of Mecca, of the Holy Land, or any of the rest of it. And so they had to be removed by violent means. Do you think there is still enough of that mentality with ISIS and the other violent groups to maintain any momentum? Or are they, in under enough pressure from the military strife that's a problem for them?
You know, in the old days, we used to have Coke machines. And when you put your 50 cents in and the soda didn't come out, you got so used to getting a soda that you didn't just walk away. You beat the machine for a little while, you shook it, you rocked it, you reached up inside of it and tried to grab a can. Well, that's the same thing that's going to happen with ISIS and Al-Qaeda. You know, they're not going to say, oh, well, you know, we've had this, they've got this, you know, incredible weapon and they've got these military powers and people seem to be massing against us. Oh, no. Here's what Khalid Sheikh Mohammed thinks. I can tell you that what he thinks is that's God testing you. You know, if you think that when you encounter obstacles, it's God, it's Allah, testing to see if you have the spiritual resolve to be worthy, then you approach that differently than you do if you think, oh, my goodness, how are we going to make this happen now that all these people are starting to align against us? Because in his mind, the victory would be that much more sweet. And Allah's power would be that much more evident. If we can defeat all of the forces aligned against us, then what an incredible way for Allah to show his power. And what an amazing thing for me to be a participant in. Surely I'll get into paradise. Not the way that we think in the U.S.
We'll be back after the break with more discussion with Dr. James Mitchell.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.